Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dave Driscoll of WOI Special Features Division speaking to you from the 244th Coast Artillery Armory at 125 West 14th Street in the city of New York, where an impromptu ceremony is being held to say goodbye to the first of New York City's selectees who will, by this afternoon, be on their way to Camp Upton at Yaphank, Long Island, and to Fort Dix, New Jersey. Today, 237 men are being put through the induction process and ceremony in four induction stations in Greater New York. 42 men from Manhattan, 60 from Brooklyn, 75 from the Bronx, and 42 from Queens County. This, of course, is the Manhattan Induction Center. Here with us in the armory is Colonel Arthur V. McDermott, the Director of Selective Service for New York, as well as his executive officer, Major William Walsh. The mayor of New York, Mayor LaGuardia, arrived just a moment ago, and here also to bid an informal welcome to the men who are now meeting Army life for the first time is Colonel Emil P. Pearson, the commanding officer of the Southern New York Recruiting District. But before we hear from those gentlemen, may I introduce, which is an odd way to say it, but introduce Lieutenant Paul J. Brienza of the Regular Army Staff stationed here at the Armory, who will give the oath to one of the selectees. Lieutenant?
Mr. Grivet, you are about to be inducted into the Army of the United States. I will now administer the oath. Please raise your right hand and repeat your full name. I,
Harry Grivet,
do solemnly swear or affirm that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the United States of America, that I will serve them honestly and faithfully against all their enemies whomsoever, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me according to the rules and articles of war. I do.
I do.
You are now a member of the Army of the United States. Congratulations, Private Grimmett.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
And I noted that it was Mr. when he first addressed him, and Private when he finished the oath. Now let us turn to Colonel Arthur V. McDermott, who is over in the crowd of newspaper reporters and photographers here, and ask him to say a few words to the selectees assembled here. The men are now, I believe, out of your charge, are they not, Colonel, and
That's
in the
right.
Army. Colonel McDermott.
You young men standing before me are the first of the New York City quota to be inducted into the service of your country under the provisions of the Selective Service and Training Act. This is the first time that I have had the opportunity to address you personally, and I want to make the most of it. I feel very strongly that you have exercised excellent judgment. Most of you are volunteers, which means that you have had the foresight and good sense to take immediate advantage of what I feel is an opportunity for all young men in this country. During the coming year of Army training, you will have the opportunity to improve yourself physically and mentally to a degree which cannot be matched in many situations in civilian life today. Whatever your reasons for volunteering, the results will all be beneficial. If you have been unemployed, you will come away from your year in the Army with a little money in your pockets, a disciplined point of view, and new skills to make you better fitted for the competition of job hunting. If you volunteered because you felt that city life had failed to give you proper opportunities for physical development, the Army will take care of that. Good food, exercise, regular hours, and medical supervision added an inch to the chest circumference of the men who went to the Army in 1917. And while there was a decrease in waistline, the average weight of the draftees was substantially increased during their Army service. There is no reason to feel that this will not again be the case, especially as our medical knowledge and our understanding of proper feeding has greatly improved since 1917. I believe that all of you, in addition to whatever personal motives you have had for volunteering, did so above and beyond them out of pure patriotism. I know that you feel, whatever the individual benefits of Army training, your country is going to be the chief one to benefit. Today in America, we have a new birth of patriotism. As we look across the Atlantic and watch country after country losing everything that a people holds precious, we know at least, and at last, what it is we have to guard. We are unified in our determination to protect America from aggression. In your hands is that protection. As Director of Selective Service for New York City, my work, so far as you are concerned, is done. And I turn you over to Colonel Pearson, who represents the Army, confident that our protection is in good hands.
Thank you, Colonel McDermott. And before we do turn the microphone over to Colonel Pearson, we want to introduce Major William Walsh, the Executive Officer of the Selective Service Administration for New York. Major Walsh.
Colonel McDermott has just congratulated you on having the foresight and good sense to take advantage of the opportunity to profit by a year of Army life. As his Executive Assistant Director, I have kept closely in touch with you through your local board since you registered on October 16th. And I want to congratulate you on the intelligent, helpful manner in which you have cooperated with the Selective Service System in New York City. If your conduct during your year with the Army is as excellent, they'll have to get civilians for KP duty. It always gives me pleasure to hark back to Registration Day, which, as far as you are concerned, was the beginning of all this. We at Selective Service Headquarters here in New York City had been working on the plans for registration for some time previously. With a staff of only 60, we made arrangements to register over 1 million men in a day. That fall called for the commandeering of help from all the departments of the municipal government. And with the permission of Mayor LaGuardia, we added 53,000 volunteers to our staff for that day. We point with pride to that job of organization. It was something that we, who were involved in it, will never forget. But without the complete cooperation of that one factor over which we had control, you, yourselves, it would all have been for nothing. As it was, in a city of 7 million people, there was only one instance of discord. Two registrants, both claimed the privilege of being first in line and decided to settle it without arbitration. Think of it, over 1 million men, each doing what his country asked him without dissension. Since Registration Day, the members of the local boards have reported the same spirit of intelligent cooperation. Therefore, I know I speak for Colonel McDermott and the members of his staff when I say to the first of you to be inducted into service that it has been a privilege we will never forget to have been associated with you and those who follow you in this great peacetime program for defense, with such unity of purpose and mind on the part of her young men, America is safe.
Thank you, Major Walsh. And it is particularly interesting, I believe, to point out that the New York City Selective Service Administration did such a swell job that the Army felt it was a little bit on the spot and had to really do this induction ceremony in the most efficient manner today in order to keep pace with the Selective Service. They did a dress rehearsal of the induction ceremony yesterday to be sure that it was right. But now, let me introduce the mayor of the city of New York, Mayor Fiorello H. LaGuardia.
Boys, I come here today to wish you Godspeed. The day that you've entered the United States Forces. The first thing I want to tell you is that you showed rare good judgment in volunteering. In other words, you'll have this all back of you and you'll be through when other fellows on your list will just be going. So you have that advantage. Now, another thing I want to say is that neither you nor your families have anything to worry about. And when I say that, boys, I don't say it because somebody told me or I got it out of a book. I lived through it, and I know all about it. I was raised on an Army post, and know all about Army life. Now, you're going to get just as much out of it as your country is going to get out of it. And the advantage of both, of course, means a great deal to our future safety. Now, here's the situation. In the event of an attack, or in the event of war, the youth of the country is called upon to defend it. That's existed ever since we have any record of history. Here's the difference between what you are doing now and what the boys had to do in 1917. In 1917, there was no opportunity of previous training. And the boys were called after the country was confronted with a war emergency. and training necessarily had to be hurried and incomplete, if not imperfect. The situation just couldn't do anything else. Now, we call you in first because we are sure that if we are prepared in personnel and equipment, there will be no occasion to call you in a state of war. We are confident that there will be no attack if we are properly prepared. And then we want to give you a thorough training to protect yourselves. Now, the first few days at camp may seem strange. It'll be rather new to you. The purpose of this training is to prepare you for proper service to your country, not only military, but to yourselves after you come out of the army. First, the physical setup. Now, that may seem tiresome the first few hours or the first few days, but you will soon see the advantage of it. Now, there is one thing that we must have in every large organization, whether it's the army, the navy, the city, or the state, or a big corporation. That's discipline. Now, boys, I want you to understand that. Unless you are able to obey orders, you will never be able to give orders. The ability to understand the necessity of discipline is an advantage not only for your own military service, but for your own lives thereafter. So don't think that it's exaggerated. And don't think that the non-coms and the officers are putting it on too much or ragging you or riding you. If they repeat orders, it's because it's necessary to be able to obey an order so that you can give orders later on. Don't think that you are humiliated because you are required to salute a superior officer. That's only courtesy. You salute, you greet your own friends, you greet the people that you work with. The difference is that we don't tip hat, we don't bow, we give an established, recognized military salute. That simply means that you are ready for duty, and the officer responds by saying, "Thank you, I have no orders to give at this time," or to give the necessary order at the time. There's nothing exaggerated in that. There's nothing humiliating in that. It's just common courtesy. That's all there is to it. Now, a great deal I heard Major Wall spoof about kitchen police. Well, I think that's necessary. When I was married, I knew more about the kitchen than my wife did because I had kitchen police, and she never had. She was working in an office. So all these things that you're assigned to are all necessary to learn, and just take it in good grace. Always have a sense of humor, and you'll find that you'll benefit by it. Now, don't write hard luck letters home. They're worrying enough about it. Just tell them the truth. Just tell them what's going on and what you're doing and your reaction to it. And I want to leave you with this. It's going to be pleasant after you get the swing of it. It's going to be interesting, and it's going to be useful. And neither you nor your families have anything to worry about. And any one of us here, any of us old duffers, would give anything if we could swap with you, take your age, and go through a year, then stay home at our old age.
Now we introduce to welcome the men into the Army, Colonel Emil P. Pearson, the commanding officer of Southern New York Recruiting District. Colonel Pearson.
Mr. Mayor, Colonel McDermott, and men. It is indeed a pleasure for me to welcome you into the Army of the United States. You surprise me, Colonel McDermott, in that you bring out such a nice group of men. We've got one and all of you, men that can do just as well as we ever could have expected. I've been interested for some months in recruiting the regular army up to full strength to have enough good men in it for the purpose of training you during the period you are to be with us. You are now a part of us. By this act of induction of our strong young men, such as you are, into the Army, we automatically enlarge our national defense, our national land forces, to include each and every one of those of you who are listening to me or listening to my voice over the radio. These men are your sons, your brothers, and your sweethearts. You wish them well. Their knowing this will make them all the more eager to prepare themselves for the day when a foe might threaten our shores, our homes, yes, our very liberty. Our regular army has always been very small in proportion to the proportion of our population. We are now beginning to enlarge it to meet any possible need. It is self-evident that the stronger we are, the less likely we will be to be called upon to use that force, because no enemy of less force than we have will venture to attack us. Neither will we dare to engage in undeclared, neither will they dare to engage in undeclared war upon us. While in the Army, you men will learn first to take good care of yourselves, physically. Second, to defend yourselves against attack. And third, to wage offensive warfare with the most modern weapons obtainable. You men will be fed, will be well fed. You will be well clothed, and you will be well housed under conditions approaching field conditions. In the event of sickness or accident or accidental injury, you'll receive the best of medical care. In short, in this our army, which we are talking about, it represents us, and we know that each inductee will contribute whatever is required of him to ensure that the Star-Spangled Banner shall continue to wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave. That's it.
Thank you, Colonel Pearson. We have a moment or two left. I'd like to take a boy at random out of this crowd of 42. Here's a boy. What's your number on your collar here? 62. What does that mean?
Well, I'm the 62nd one to be examined.
62nd one to be examined. Where are you from and what is your name?
Well, my name is Max Perlman, and I'm from board number 2 down on the Lower East Side of New York.
How old are you?
21.
You're single.
That's right.
What did you do before you were inducted into the service?
Well, I was working for the National Youth Administration as a writer on a journalism project.
I see. What part of the service would you like to go in?
I'd like to get into the Signal Corps because I've studied photography and I want to get into an allied trade.
Are you looking forward to the trip this afternoon down to Fort Dix?
Well, yes.
It's a little bit strange at this stage, isn't it?
Slightly so. I'm unfamiliar with it.
Well, you'll find a very grand welcome down there. I was down there myself last week, and everything is set for your arrival, and you'll be very warmly welcome.
Thanks
a lot. Let's have one more word with another boy here, number 40, with his number on his collar. What is your name?
Sidney Kurtz.
Come on over a little closer. Sidney Kurtz, where are you from?
Down the Lower East Side, Sheriff Street.
How old? Right into the microphone here. How old?
24.
Single?
That's right.
What did you do before you were inducted in service?
I worked at the NYA, too. I was the recreational director.
I see. You think you're going to get into that sort of work in the Army, or are you going to have to work a little hard in that?
I'll take whatever they give me.
Okay, you'll get it.
All right.
We're going to conclude this broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, which has been originating in the 244th Coast Artillery Armory in New York City, one of the four induction stations in Greater New York, where today, in this city, 237 selectees are being put through the induction process and ceremonies, and will finally find their way this afternoon to Fort Dix and Camp Upton. Dave Driscoll speaking in a program presented in the interests of public service by WOR Special Features Division. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.